So hello everybody and welcome. This is Justin and Lizzie and we are here from Third Space. And this is the 260th installment in our weekly Turning Towards Life practice and podcast. And you are all so, so welcome to be with us wherever you are, whenever you're listening to this, whatever medium you found us on. In our Facebook group or on our turningtowards.life website or on a podcast or who knows where, YouTube, you might have found us. You are so welcome to be with us in this conversation that's going to unfold over the next 30 minutes. And that's whether you're finding us this week or joined us 260 weeks ago. And welcome, Lizzie. So lovely to be with you again. And I'm feeling very joyful. I'm going to make a big deal of this, I think, this weekend, next week. Because it being episode 260 and us never having missed one means that today we're completing 5 years of talking with one another in this way and 5 years of having people come alongside us. And I feel very joyful about that. I'm feeling really joyful about what it is to be in a practice of repeating. And I'm feeling very joyful about what it is to be doing something really ordinary, which is talking and listening to one another. That also feels very rich and deep and alive, which I think are all the best things are. They're ordinary and full at the same time. So such a joy to be here with you and be here with everyone.
Thank you, Justin, for reminding us of the timing all the time. I suddenly have a feeling of, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do this. Like somehow you announce and you've done it for 5 years. Like, oh, how ridiculous that we're going to talk for 30 minutes and we don't know what's going to happen or what. I mean, suddenly it feels really miraculous. We've managed to do that lots of times. And it's so amazing that that's even true, Justin. My goodness. And all of those ones who listen and feel connected with us and the kind of commitment we have to people that we don't know. I love that. I love that. And every time I meet someone who listens to Turning Towards Life and I've never met them yet, there's such a lovely familiarity there. And I feel so welcome. And they feel welcome because, of course, this is in service of us and them. And I just, it's wonderful. It's one of those things, like one of those outcomes or whatever you said, the consequences of this that they were, mostly actually all the consequences of this I would never have been able to foresee. You know, like we began this with a kind of quite a thin understanding of what it was going to be because we just did it. We didn't analyze it too much or say this is what we wanted it to produce or something. We just began. So then when things happen from it, I think, my goodness, how crazy that wasn't an intended consequence, and yet the unintended consequences are massively beautiful. So anyway, I'm really grateful for us and for everyone who listens. And goodness me, it's excellent, isn't it? I'm so happy in 5 whole years. My goodness, bonkers. So today, and who knows what significance this has, that this, because I didn't realize it was our 5-year thing when I chose the source. It's not like I thought, oh, let's get something that's good for 5 years or something. But this is the one that we've managed to choose for our 5th whole year celebratoriness of doing this. And it goes like this. And by the way, you can find this on turningtowards.life on our lovely website, and you can sign up for the emails that have this come into your inbox once a week so that you don't have to find us. You can just click on the link in the email that you receive. Which, by the way, is expertly completely set up by Justin. Justin is so excellent. He does so much for this. I'm grateful, Justin, for all of the things that you do to get this into the world. The Spotify thing, the website thing, the email thing, the everything thing. Thank you. So here we go. Here's our source for this week. Peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice. the act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer, the act of finding a third way that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. It is about a revolution of love that is big enough to set both the oppressed and the oppressors free. And this is from a book called Common Prayer, A Liturgy for Ordinary Radicals by Shane Claiborne, Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove and Anuma Okoro.
Thank you, Lizzie, for finding this. So I'm going to read it too. Peacemaking doesn't mean passivity. It is the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice, the act of disarming evil without destroying the evildoer, the act of finding a third way that is neither fight nor flight, but the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. It is about a revolution of love that is big enough to set both the oppressed and the oppressors free.
Thanks, Justin. So all I know is that when I read this, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to talk about that. I need more distinctions in me. I need more understanding of what this actually means. And I have felt so uncomfortable for so long, Justin, with this kind of punishment narrative that we have that leaves somebody kind of exiled for doing something. And it feels like this goes right to the heart of that unease. And I feel like, you know, even with children, you know, the person who whacks the child, the other child, the person, the whacker gets punished and the whacky gets kind of taken care of. Like it gets set up so early that we work to use punishment as a means of teaching or something. Or, and I just don't feel okay about that. And so many things in the world are happening today where people are speaking up for things, and this kind of whoever's doing the oppressing and whoever is being oppressed, it feels like something much, much more intelligent is needed rather than you're bad and you're good. And that this is being written about just in this particular way. And it appeared somewhere in my world of internetness and grabbed me. And of course, I don't even know actually the date that this was written or where it comes from. I haven't researched it. But it feels like it's been around for a very, very long time, this practice. And of course, Third Space is a dedication to this. And that's what I always feel about our work, is that the parts of me that extremely easily polarize and to good and bad and right and wrong get completely undone and also kind of held by the work that we do. So I feel like this articulation of this third way of a non-polarized, non-punishing world, but a world where we acknowledge pain and sometimes ignorance and sometimes purposefully doing bad things, that they come from somewhere much deeper, like that the behavior itself, the thing that's been done itself, is not the place to stop looking. But there's a reason why all these things happen and that we are the way that we are. And there's a reason I do the things that I do that are unkind. There's a reason that I do the things that I do that are mean sometimes, that I can reach for the part of me even where I'm the oppressor and be kind and understanding and see what that is. And that feels like such a more hopeful way to deal with me or someone else. than by punishing myself and pushing myself away and creating more hurt, as if it would be in service of something different happening in the future.
And this is how much is happening in me as you're talking, Lizzie, because it's so easy to read this in a kind of oh yes kind of way. Of course, obvious, you know, obviously we want to find. But I notice as I look inside me, it's really complicated. So I'm noticing as you were talking, that in me that really wants to hold together this very complex, principle loving, subtle place of what's neither fight nor flight, and what's reconciliation and justice.
Mm-hmm.
Which are, if I just take reconciliation and justice, they are two really big things. Reconciliation is as we find a way into relationship with one another, and justice is we don't, in our pursuit of peacemaking, stand by while hurt is being propagated or oppression is being propagated. So they're not easy to hold together. There's no sort of straightforward. And I can feel in me so many different sort of parts of me with different forces and different directions rising as you're speaking, like how much I want to and am the oppressor sometimes when I'm trying to protect somebody else who I think is being oppressed.
Yeah.
How much I oppress parts of myself, or parts of me oppress other parts of myself in the middle of the energy of emotion that comes up when something mm-hmm. really needs setting right. How often I have in my life gone down the route of passivity as a way of peacemaking, and in doing so kept things going, and then try to correct for it by going down the fight route in order to make up for my passivity. How, you know, it's like a, and it feels to me in, as I'm saying this, as I'm listening to you, is that maybe this sounds really obvious, but for me, it really bears saying that what this writing calls for is not a thing, not like a series of steps that you might take when there's something that needs addressing, but more like an ongoing kind of sensitivity to this multidimensional commitment to bring about peace in a way that both includes and honors and puts forth justice and deals with shame and helps us see that in ourselves, which is oppressing, and helps us see where we haven't spoken up, where we could have done. And so it's a really sort of fulsome ongoing process that we have to, sort of like a tension in a way that we have to live in the middle of in order for any of this to be possible. And I'm really glad we're talking about it, because I also think a big part of what this calls for that's not named in this little, very powerful sort of jewel of a piece is that we have to talk to one another. Like if we want to be peacemakers, and I'm thinking of a situation I'm involved in at the moment where I feel very protective to someone who's under attack, and the people who are attacking the person also feel great pain that probably isn't seen. And I want to be a fierce protector, and I want to listen, and every time I make a move, I can feel all the different parts of me come up that will judge me and judge them and judge the situation. So I think we have to, it's striking me, it really takes a kind of slowing down and a breathing together, and then a being willing to talk to one another and to say to another, hey, I'm struggling in this. This is really hard. This isn't a standard to hold myself more as much as a vow to work towards, or a path to faithfully walk, which is going to take every ounce of heart and intelligence and that I can bring. Mm.
Yeah, what's arising in me as you talk, Justin, is this sense I have a lot of this question that I always ask myself, which is, how do I be in service of the relationship that's in front of me? think it's so unhelpful when there's a conflict of some kind to land in any one camp. And I look, and I see that from having done it many times, where I'm like, I can think of like really fierce times I've had where I've been, you know, like, no. And many times that kind of boundary seems to me like it's required, but it has a cost as well. Like, I can see that in hindsight, whenever I've been that kind of fierce lioness that just draws a line. But the question of how do I be in service of the relationship feels like it's a good one, because I don't know the answer to it. It's like I have to practice my way in. You know, it's like I don't know how to be in service of the relationship. But what I do know is if I put myself in there and I see if I can act in service of the relationship, my actions that answer that question are very different than my actions when I land in one place or the other. And it's much more obvious to me what to do when I land in one place or the other, but it's not obvious to do when I try to answer that question, which means I have to rely on presence and I have to rely on my kind of in the moment capacity to serve something that's less tangible, that's less visible, that's less obvious to me. And in my experience of myself, it takes my like proper bravery to step in as well, because of course for all of us separation and conflict, you know, well, not maybe not for all of us, some people maybe enjoy that, I don't know, I don't enjoy it, because it feels like I can see separation so clearly and it causes me lots of pain, that the opposite of harmony is happening. And so it takes me to work with my own difficulties around harmony and conflict to not shy away or to freeze or fly away in the presence of conflict, to be able to stay and say, well, what's in service of the relationship? And many times I have felt like staying is just part of the answer of, you know, just not running away, just not pulling the lid down and pretending it's not happening, but actually staying and doing whatever I can to answer that question, what would be in service of the relationship? But it's not, as you say, it's really not easy or straightforward to be someone who stands in the middle of two people or two somethings and to work in service of the relationship. I think loads of parenting when you have more than one child is about this. I think so much of our work, Justin, even when you're working with one individual, I find myself always answering the question of, well, what's in service of the relationship that you're dedicated to in this something that you're bringing to a coaching relationship? How do we talk that's in service of that, rather than me wholly justifying your position and saying only that of course I would say I understand what you're saying to me, but that can't be where the conversation stops. It's part of it, but there's something much more mysterious and difficult to hang on to, which is when you and I are together, when any two are together, relatedness. It feels like we can serve the relatedness, which is very different to serving one or the other. And that for me is the kind of confounding, inspiring, confusing, challenging proposition that this piece of writing brings to me, which is how do I do that? And I'm not, you know, I genuinely don't have an answer to that, but I can see the places where I'm in service to the relatedness versus when I'm in service to my own self-protection or my own protectiveness of another or my own opinion or my own world view or, you know, something where I feel defended and guarded and I would say kind of unhealthily powerful for my system versus a kind of healthy power which is in service of something much bigger than one thing.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really struck by the move that you made to put the relationship, to have the relationship be the something in the center. which makes it different from how this goes for me or how it goes for you, but for something that includes both of us. And the the word that came to me whilst you were talking about it, I was trying to see if I could feel into this, because I'm very, very alive to how protector parts of me, when I feel very, very strongly about something, particularly when I'm trying to protect something, can come up in I just want to beat you, you know, win, or mm-hmm. I just want to show that I'm right. And how ashamed I feel about those protector parts too. So I can really notice in myself a pattern that very easily arises, particularly when I feel afraid, which is that's going to come up and I'm going to win this situation, and then I'm going to collapse into what did I do and what did I say and was that all right and what have I done, and you know, all of those kind of things are sort of polarizing that goes on in me in situations where I suppose it's this line for me really sticks out. It's the act of interrupting injustice without mirroring injustice.
Mm.
I mean, frankly, sometimes it feels really good to be the one who goes, well, I'm just going to visit the same injustice that you're bringing. I'm going to visit back on you, and then you'll know what it feels like. And mm-hmm. I really understand it because it's easy for me to do.
Yeah.
Oh. And so the word that came up for me whilst you were talking was dignity. And if I let myself, if I find the capacity to do it, to really feel what feels dignified for everyone, it's not so hard for me to know what the right thing to do is, or what probably not what the right thing to do is, because I don't think there's any way of ever knowing that, but what an appropriate response might be in this moment.
Mm.
And sometimes it's really dignified to go, I'm not saying this to you, of course, Lizzie, like real, but you know, Lizzie, what you did was really hurtful. It's really painful to me that you would speak that way or act that way. And not saying that is to not take up my dignity. And sometimes it's just to stop and to listen to whatever it is that you have to say. But I can feel in myself, if I come at it from this point of dignity, I can feel what it feels like in my body when I'm straying into fight, which has me feel sort of puffed up and powerful and safe momentarily. Or when I'm falling into flight, which has me feel small and diminished. And I notice how easy it is for me to bounce between fight and flight and fight and flight when I'm in something like this. So for me, the sort of word of what the practices of dignity are that I can feel in my own body that aren't strategizing and aren't trying to figure out what to do, but can I just tune into this so that I have a chance of disarming evil, for example, which is a very big thing to be saying, or I have the chance of pursuing both reconciliation and justice, which, like I said, are hard to hold together.
Yeah.
It is really easy to fall into one side at the expense of the other.
Mm.
And what's so confounding about it to me is that when I sit with you here to talk to you about it, I can feel like it feels like a really truthful way to talk about it, talking about what is it that maintains the dignity of everyone. But it's rarely like that when I'm in the middle of it. When particularly I'm in the middle of something I really care about and my body is flooded with everything that's going on. So I suppose I want to find a way of honoring the ordinary messiness of our attempts to walk through this too, to say, gosh, I make so many missteps in this. So many missteps. And what I hope to be is someone who can at least look at, or maybe get some help in looking at the missteps and also looking at all the places I did act with dignity and love and care and justice, you know, like, so that I can take another step forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want this text, this wonderful piece that we're reading, to be another way to defend myself by shaming myself for not living up to its standards or something.
Mm. Yeah. So as you've been talking, Justin, I find this, I don't know what it is, like a set of words arising around being someone who has their arms around and their orientation be towards systems. Like, I think this is a kind of really technical way of talking about systems thinking and theory and whatever. But it's suddenly arising in me that we have to. So I think it can be really overwhelming to be relating to the world as a set of systems. And so to be a person who relates to systems can produce passivity. As in, oh my gosh, I can see how messed up this is and I can't do anything, so I'm just going to back off and let myself be in some kind of peace, personal peace. And the question that's arising in me is, what is there, how do I need to be in order to be someone who sees and feels systems and is in service to systems and doesn't do that? And maybe I do, but, you know, some of the time that I wouldn't have to do that because it was too scary or too confusing or too overwhelming or too big. And I notice in myself that to be in service of a system, whether it's a family system or an organizational system or a community system or any other one, which is a collection of humans up to something together. And of course, the order of system can get bigger and bigger and smaller and smaller. And I'm a system too, as a person, because as you keep saying, you know, there's so many parts of me and so many things going on, multitudinousness going on in me at any one moment, as with any human. If I want to be in service of the system, it's like, I have to have something quite different available to me than opinions and polarities and right and wrong and black and white. It has to be much more, I have to be able to tolerate much more complexity than that. And also to find distinction in complexity as well. And, you know, you said at the beginning, it's about talking to one another. I feel like that's the hope for me inside of this, like being a person who sees and feels and is in service to systems and feeling hopeful can be hard. And yet when you talk about being in conversation with one another, I can feel my hope draining back into me of like, I'm not alone. This is big and it's hard. And that we can talk. You know, Justin, you and I were in a meditation thing, I don't know when it was, a couple of weeks ago now, and one of the lines was, maybe there are no answers, but there are still conversations to be had. And I feel like that's the hopeful piece for me, is like when I feel completely confounded and that there isn't a way to, like my whole being wants to reduce something to actions or to something that has to happen or to a rightness or to a wrongness or to a decision or something. I can feel my longing for just reduction, and the reduction is not possible, which is kind of the nature of a system in some ways, that reduction just can't happen in so many ways. And then we can be in relationship and we can be in conversation arises, and I go, oh, okay, now there's a step to take, but it's not the answer and it's not a conclusion and it doesn't solve everything, and but it's what's to be done in service of whatever this thing is that we're holding and intending towards healing or goodness or awareness or whatever the intention is. So I feel like hope returns when we're in it together with one another. And then the other thing that happens is that this doesn't turn into an articulation of how I'm failing in the world. Because I think that can also be that too, which is like, oh my gosh, I'm terrible at this. I can't do the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. Like, I'm just me and I'm complaining about the way that the washing up's done or something. But then having this as a possibility, hand in hand with the kind of relational conversation that's possible, so that this doesn't become another evil arrow of my superego coming to get me, of, well, look how, you know, which pushes me further back into passivity again. You know, there's the other thing of tolerating what it feels like to not be good at this and not be skilled at this yet, but to not let myself back off, like not let myself go into the passive place and giving up and withdrawing place and going under the duvet. We're saying I'm willing to stay, but my willingness to stay, I notice, is very, very related to being in it together and being able to have a conversation and to find our way through. And I've been struck recently just in by the way that we've been doing these unhurried conversations, you know, the practice we have in third space of going round and someone speaks until they're finished and then another person speaks until they're finished. And it's not like a conversation as we typically understand it, where there's like backwards and forwards, but there's a space into which everything gets plonked and then something happens. I mean, I've been completely shocked by quite profound, upsetting conflict not unfolding the way an argument normally does, but something gets resolved in the saying and the feeling and the responding, and in the unhurriedness and in the presence, something happens which is different to having a fight about it and getting a resolution to it. So I feel like this word of reconciliation and this word of justice, they also come about in mysterious ways. I mean, mysterious to the polarizing part of me that thinks, well, it has to be done this way and we have to resolve something and it has to be a solution. Like that's not what those things mean, but it's very anti the way that my mind works of polarizing and black and whiteness. That's not how it happens. And so to be in systems where we can have practices that bring about this kind of reconciliation and justice that aren't about solutions and aren't about red lines and aren't about deadlines, and is really miraculous to me.
I feel such relief in me when you're talking about unhurried conversations, Lizzie, and I have a feeling at some point maybe we'll have a longer conversation about those. This whole piece that we've been talking about for this last half an hour or so is written in a way that shows us the polarities. Disarming evil, destroying the evildoer, fight, mm-hmm. flight, reconciliation, justice, peace, passivity, oppressed, oppressor. And that's right. You know, this is an important piece of writing to write that way. And before you started talking about unhurried conversations, one of the things that I was feeling into was how, for me, part of this work is doing this work inside myself. Mm-hmm. Because whenever any of those polarities show up in me, they show up in polarizing ways in the world. And so there's just for as long as I have left, mm-hmm. work to do on that. Yeah. But you were just describing this practice of unhurried conversation where we gather round and instead of responding to one another and to one another's points and to coming in to try and convince or something, we really, really slow everything down and just go round and round and round, giving everybody enough time to say whatever it is that they want to say in a fixed order, so that I'm not coming in to jump in on the thing that you just said that yeah. triggered something in me. And how much happens when we stop seeing our conversations as sometimes there are conversations where things have to be worked out and decided and resolved. Of course there are. But how often we take that mood and that frame into every way that we're trying to deal with something difficult that we're in the middle of. And maybe that's a sort of a huge cultural assumption that that's what you do. Mm. You have a meeting and you come to a conclusion, or you, you know, you have a showdown, or you...
Yeah.
And there's really something to be said for maybe the careful, arduous pursuit of reconciliation and justice. One really big part of it is slowing down enough just to keep on hearing one another.
Yeah.
Even if what we hear is not what we want to hear, even if it's really hard, even, but we could spend quite a lot longer doing that before we try to do something else. And like you say, sometimes miraculously that act of slowing down and just really hearing one another without trying to score any kind of point or win or even have anything happen does something very mysterious and magical.
I'm so glad to have found a way to find more in this together in the conversation, Justin. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for being with us. Thank you for the people who articulated this. Thank you that this is a possibility in our world. And in a way, this is an unhurried conversation, Justin, as well. So the practice is kind of on display, and this is what it is, which makes it possible, actually, because we don't have any demands on ourselves or any need to resolve anything, but we're just saying what's here. And I love that. So thank you for everyone being here with us. Thank you to you, Justin. Thank you to us for doing this for 5 whole years. It's miraculous. And we'll be back for the beginning of our 6th year next week on Sunday at 9 o'clock UK time.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.